Brian had a dream. 10,000 movies, 40 years. This is his journey. This is your invitation to join along. This is the quest for 10,000. Hello and welcome to the inaugural episode of The Quest for 10,000, One Man's Journey to Watch 10,000 Movies Before He Turns 40. I'm your host, Ben, and to my left is the man, the myth, and maybe the legend, Brian Ashley Stack. How you doing, Brian?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Ben?
I'm doing great. Brian is the founder, owner, chief executive officer, and writer of the blog 10kmovies.com, which chronicles his quest to watch that number of movies, as I said, before he turns 40. This podcast is an audio complement companion piece to that blog. As Brian gets further along in his quest, realized that maybe having another way to chronicle his tales and give his movie reviews would be an interesting way to keep things fresh and keep things going as he enters into the second half of his quest. Brian just recently watched his 5,000th movies and a couple beyond that, and so we'll be talking about that a little bit later. Thanks so much, though, first and foremost, for downloading and listening to this podcast. We hope that you'll have a good time with us. Brian and I are definitely going to have a good time. Brian, we've known each other for about how long now?
We're in the middle of our third decade.
Our third decade. That's just kind of incredible. Earlier today, I was near our old high school going to a graduation party, and I was thinking about that, about how long we've known each other since those days, how much has changed, how much has stayed the same. And one of the very cornerstones of our friendship was and has always been movies. Brian has embraced film, though, as the years have gone on, in a way much deeper than I have. And so, listeners, part of what I'm hoping on this journey is that as Brian and I talk, one, that I might rediscover a love of things that were so important to me when I was younger, that I might learn something new about some movies and films, that you might as well, and that Brian gets to share all this knowledge that he has. For this first episode, though, we're going to cut right to the chase and kind of try to find out from Brian, why is it that you started this quest? How did it come to be? Why'd you write a blog about it? And just get your kind of origin story out of the way, so to speak.
We were talking about an origin story, and I was going to say there was a radioactive spider. But it's nothing quite that dramatic or cool. I've always been a little bit of an obsessive-compulsive type personality, and it's always been easy to convince me to, like, collect things and do list things, you know, like, when we were kids and you go to McDonald's and they say, you got to collect them all. I was like, yeah, I need to do it.
You know, it's like, we got to come back every week, Mom.
Like, oh, there's four more Berenstain Bears here, Mom. You know, that kind of thing. Like, did I care about the Bears? No, but there's four more.
Berenstain Bears reference. That's nice.
So
It's a deep cut.
Yeah. So I was always kind of, you know, needing something to like keep my mind going. Like one more. And when I was younger, you know, it was comic books, and that was a bit expensive to keep up because it just keeps growing, and then they convince you need to get, you know, all six Superman titles, and, you know, and it just, I couldn't do that. So one Christmas, I think it was, maybe a birthday, a friend of mine bought me a book, 101 four-star movies, five-star movies. I said, okay, I'll work my way through this and just see, because, you know, see how many of them I've seen. And, you know, when I finished that, then I saw Roger Ebert had a book, Greatest Movie. He has three books, Greatest Movies, three different books, 100 movies each. So I got the first one, and I worked my way through that. And then it was like, well, at this point, you know, I'm just watching more and more and more and diving into it. And then at a certain point, I just started keeping track of which ones I'd seen when. And then another friend of mine, he would come to, you know, see us, and he'd say, about his favorite movie of the year. So that's my favorite from this year. That's my top five from this year. So he had ranked the movies he'd seen. So I said, that's interesting. So I went about, you know, going through that process of ranking them. And then I found this website, iCheckMovies.com, which was, you know, like, this thing exists. There are other people that do this. Like, this is you know, like a eye-opening lightning rod kind of thing. Like, whoa, I can. So I started working my way through the numerous list on that. That's a process that I doubt it will ever. I mean, I will maybe set this aside at one time, but you could do that indefinitely. And then the blog just sort of came up out as an outlet to sort of, A, justify what I'm doing, and B, make some something productive out of it so that it's not just...
To add some accountability and do that sort of thing. Now, earlier you were telling me, too, that your family also had an influence and a push on you in this quest. Tell us a little bit more about that.
At one point, you know, I like to read about things, and because I like to know, at least have some ideas, so there's conversations come up, I can say something and join the conversation. Well, my wife would call me on it, and she'd be like, yeah, actually, you know, somebody's mentioned a movie, and I'd be like, yeah, well, what about this part and this part? And she'd be like, did you actually watch the movie? And I'd be like, no, I just read about it. She's like, well, you should watch what you're talking about instead of just, you know, jumping into a conversation, reading a plot summary or a review, and then talking about it as if you'd seen it. So she was right. Much to her, you know, regret later.
now to her regret. In no way was that
to happen quite the way it did.
Yeah, no way. Yeah, it's, I gotta have them all. I gotta have them all, Mom.
There's 200 left and 1,001. I'm getting close. 80% done.
Going. Just gotta get them going.
But that is exactly the thoughts that go through my head.
Well, we mentioned you have a blog. So what's a typical blog entry like for you?
Well, I do a couple of things. And I try to, like, the way I blog is I will talk about the 5 or 6 movies most. I never watch more than maybe. Sometimes it's just one. Sometimes it's just two. The movies I saw that particular day. And I group them together that way. So you have some, you know, it goes all over the place.
So let me stop you there. You figured out to get to 10,000 movies, you have to watch about how many movies per day now?
Ooh. From this point forward, it's a daunting task. It is somewhere closer to 3 per day for the next 5 years.
3 per day for 5
years.
Well,
a little less than 5. 4 in a couple months. I am hopeful that I can get to 5,200 before I turn 36, which would give me, you know, 1,200 a year. Which, at this point, I'm already sort of easing up my goal to say sometime the year I turn 40.
Not like the day.
Although I still would like to.
Yeah.
I mean, I still would.
That's the dream. That's the dream.
That is the dream. But I'm not sure I'm going to get there because 1,200. Okay, this year, the calendar year that I, well, the way I've done it, the year that I'm about to finish up will be about 900 and something. And that's average. 1,100 is the most, 1,200. And to keep that up is just, I don't know if it's going to
happen. Not sure it can happen, but, again, that's why this podcast is here, to try to maybe encourage you, motivate you, maybe get some other listeners to also motivate you, encourage you on towards that goal in a way that is...
in a healthy way.
Well, yeah, either way, help is kind of the goal here, listeners.
An
so,
intervention, maybe.
That may be what's going on. So with this podcast, too, we're going to be asking questions about that, like different things about Brian's quest, things he's learned, insights he's had. Now for this segment, we'll talk about what makes a movie, according to Brian's criteria on his list, and what would disqualify something maybe from being a movie. Moving on to our next segment. The top of the podcast, we alluded to the fact that you've watched 5,000 movies now, Brian. So, we'll always have something of a little bit of a review segment. So, tell us maybe about movie number 5,000 briefly.
Okay.
And maybe if you want to mention any other recent movies past 5,000 or right before 5,000 that you would encourage folks that maybe they haven't seen on the blog already.
The 5,000 movie, and no, they wouldn't have seen it because I'm not that up to date. The 5,000th movie was a kind of a dark film about chronicling a massacre that took place in Montreal in 1988 at a college there. It's called Polytechnique.
So it's a pick-me-upper.
Yeah, it's real, real. If you're looking for a date movie, I just did a thumbs up in case you didn't hear it. The director of the film will be soon, I think, more well-known because he is directing the sequel to Blade Runner.
Okay.
Denis Villeneuve, I'm not sure how you say his name. That's how little I know about him. But I'm sure people will know. He directed Prisoners, which a lot of people saw and liked a couple years ago with Hugh Jackman. But this film was one of his first. I think it came out in maybe 08, 09, something like that. And it's a tough film. It's brutal, but it's done in a way where he's black and white. He minimizes the violence. It's not gory. It's not gratuitous. I mean, you know what happens, but he doesn't go overboard to make you know, it's not a visceral kind of reaction.
Right.
He's not looking for that.
Right.
But this guy apparently, inspired by real events, he hated women. And he went to this college, and he targeted the women that were there because he didn't think they needed to be there. And, one of the women survives and has a child, and the end of the film is a very, in a lot of ways, very uplifting because it's her way of saying, I am not going to let the actions of others that have perpetrated against me define and limit me.
Right.
I am going to move beyond and above that. And it's not for everybody, and be prepared that it's not gonna, you're not gonna leave with a smile on your face. But it is a powerful and good
film. Going from a powerful to good film, but also still a film that might not leave you with a smile on your face. You recently saw a movie that is notorious, in some circles.
Yes, I did.
For how bad it is.
And that's why I watched it. Geely, which brought us
Ben. Which Fox. I always thought it was Geely.
He says it as Geely in the movie, so I'm going to go with the way the character pronounces it, because it's the character's name. It's going to happen.
And again, you should review this, because most people have not seen this movie.
Most people will not see this movie, no matter what I say. And I'm going to not recommend you to see this movie. Some movies, their reputations will ruin them, and they really should maybe be reevaluated. This film was properly evaluated the first time.
Not underestimated, no, not overestimated.
It was properly slotted.
It was estimated.
It was properly slotted in one of the... is it the worst film of all time? I think what I said on Twitter after I originally seen it, I said, it's not the worst movie of all time, but that's about all I can say for it.
Gaming with...
The
faintest of damnation.
Yeah, you're not the worst.
Not even the faintest of praise.
It could be worse. I mean, there's effort. You can tell that the people involved are not just...
What is it even about? All I know about it is that it's Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez.
There's a mobster played by Al Pacino late in the film. He's not really... He's kind of an unseen presence earlier. Who is on trial for what mobsters usually are on trial for, tax evasion, something like that. They're never on trial for killing anyone because our justice system is apparently incompetent. That's what all these movies would tell you. We can never get a mobster for actually killing anyone. All we can do is they didn't pay their taxes. But he's on trial, and he's going to go for, RICO charges or racketeering or something. He's going to go to prison for a little while. And one of his lackeys, one of his top lieutenants, decides that the best way for him to avoid prison time is to kidnap the federal prosecutor's mentally challenged brother and then demand that in order for you to have to see your brother again, drop the charges.
I know.
He can do that. Because that's not suspicious at all.
I know that this is a auditory medium, but I think everybody can see the amount of disbelief and incredulousness on your face, though we're only hearing
it. And I know, Tropic Thunder warned us that when you have a mentally challenged person in a film, you're treading dangerously.
Yes.
And this film does not care how dangerous it treads.
Right.
The character of the brother comes across like a very, a drunken, poor, there's a drunken guy at a party who's doing his very best Rain Man impression. And that's what he's doing for 30 minutes.
Spoiler alert, does Al Pacino, who I can only assume is mailing in his performance, that he's done with several.
Yeah, it's amazing.
From the late 90s on. Does he end up going to jail? Does he end up getting caught?
No. No.
No.
When they do finally... Well, okay, they send Ben Affleck's character, who is a low-level mobster, send him in to kidnap the brother. He He does so, and he holds him up. Well, then they don't trust Ben Affleck to do this, so they get another low-level mobster to come and kind of help him.
And this is the titular
This is Jennifer Geely. Lopez. No, Geely is Ben Affleck's character. His last name's Geely.
Okay. He's Geely. Mind blown.
Yeah, I know. What a twist. Jennifer Lopez is, and I don't remember her character's name, but she is the other one who comes. He resents her at first, but then there's, within 5 minutes, there's an obvious sexual, you know, chemistry between the two of them, at least on their end, not to anyone watching the movie. But then he finds out that she is a lesbian. So they're channeling Chasing Amy all over again, only this time it's with guns. So she rebuffs his advances, and he's, like, astounded. Like, what are you talking about, you know? Like, and he says something. There's lines of dialogue where he's like, I can't imagine that a woman could please you as well as I could, because I know how what a woman likes. And it's like, her lover finds them and accuses her of cheating, you know, on their relationship with Geely. And despite her protest, you know, saying, no, vehemently, no, I did not cheat on him, I love you, the lover just slits her wrist for no apparent reason. They rush her to the hospital, then they leave her there, and they go off on their own for whatever, I don't know why.
Okay. I'm going to stop you right there, because you've already spent way too much time on this film.
I can spend more.
Well, I do want to talk about the film.
Let me talk about Al Pacino's performance
and you
bit.
Also, and now you've also taken...
Let me talk about Al Pacino.
Several minutes.
It's okay. It's over the top. And they mistake...
It's like, okay. It's over the top. Al Pacino circa 2000.
Yeah. It's okay. But the main thing is not Al Pacino. It's the writing. And they mistake the idea that, like, him randomly assaulting or killing someone makes him compelling. You know, like, that in itself makes him a compelling character. Mm-hmm. That he might, you never know what's going to happen. Like, yeah, we kind of did know what's going to happen. He's a mobster.
So, again, that's Geely. We spent enough time on that. So now let's move on to our final segment. Earlier, Brian referred to ranking the movies he's seen. And so, what will become a regular feature on our podcast is a top five that Brian presents in a certain genre of movie. This being our first episode of the quest for 10,000, I thought it might be fun to ask Brian his top five movies that have first somehow in the title. Okay. So, Brian, what is your number five movie?
Number five. Classic movie. First Blood.
First Blood. Rambo. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, this is different from the other Rambo films. It's closer in tone to like a Coming Home, or got a little bit of a hint of like Death Wish and Dirty Harry in it. But it's a guy who's coming back from Vietnam, and he clearly has what we would call, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder, although I don't think they called it that then. And it's that stigma that he's associated with, and then somehow, you know, it turns into a quest for revenge for some various reason. It's a little grittier, a little more real. It's one of the, I won't say one of the, it probably is one of the best things Stallone's done, because his movies since have tended to be more spectacle and less character. This has an actual kind of a character. It's
so funny. That's what you like about.
They call him John Rambo.
That's what.
Usual movies they just call him Rambo.
And that's what you like about the film is the character-driven aspect and
it's a little different.
The nature of that, a little bit different than what the franchise is.
Just like I like the first Rocky, because it feels like a quirky kind of thing, and the others don't.
Yeah. So next, what's number four?
Next up, number four, classic film, classic comedy, First Kid, starring...
Wait, what now? What is that?
Okay, I was...
Say the title again?
First Kid.
Who does it star?
It stars... The incomparable Sinbad. Probably the highlight of his career.
One of the reasons I'm laughing, listeners, is there's a Sinbad story that we will get to.
There's so many Sinbad stories.
So many Sinbad stories, but a particular one involving Brian and myself that we will get to.
At some point. Well, this movie, and there's a whole genre of films about the trials and tribulations of being a Secret Serviceman. Funny, none of these films feature, cocaine-driven binges with hookers. But apparently that's what the Secret Service was doing.
Well, apparently.
All the while, these films were showing as being nothing but warm and fuzzy hijinks.
Right.
And this film, Sinbad, is assigned to take care of the first kid, and, you know, he resents the assignment because he thinks he should be guarding the president, but then he bonds with the child and becomes a pseudo-father figure in the way that only Sinbad can.
So what is it about this movie that makes it, gives it a place in your top four?
Well, I mean, top four with first.
Right,
so
top four
in
with
reality,
first. Right.
We're probably dealing with, you know, a C-plus movie. I mean, it's not nowhere near, you know, the top of the heap, but, you know, with this limited criteria, it moves it up some. You know, it's a fun little family film.
And you just like Sinbad.
I do like
Sinbad. He doesn't like Sinbad. Yeah, there's just
A for effort.
There's just something about Sinbad. A for effort. Which also might be said of this podcast right now. Next up, number three.
X-Men First Class.
Okay. Surprised that's only number three.
Well, this was a really a shot in the arm to a franchise that had, after the disaster of X3, had been all but left for dead.
Mm-hmm.
No, but this was a good movie. It had a lot of the star power involved helped. Matthew Vaughn, who is a pretty good director, helped. But what I really liked about it is the period superhero genre, which is something that, oddly enough, hasn't really been done a lot that I can remember. Most superhero pieces are set either in the present or in the very near past, but this is set, you know, a good while back, mm-hmm. and it enables them to make some comments on the time that they're coming out of, and it was just a fun movie.
Well, you know, and a couple other things about that. That's about the time when the original comic came out, that same time, well, that same time period, definitely. So I think it grounds that movie.
Yeah.
Listeners, as you may be able to tell, First Class is the first movie Brian's mentioned that I've also actually seen, so I can say a little bit more about it, too. And what I really enjoyed about that movie, and its sequel also, Days of Future Past, is that the cast is quite large,
mm-hmm.
but it never felt unwieldy.
No.
In that film. Very, very nicely balanced of big names before. Most of them were really big names. Jennifer Lawrence is in the film. But,
this is a huge name.
But I do like that. Yeah, the time period kind of grounds it in a way and gives it something else that the others had not had before. What's
number two?
We're
sticking with the period superhero genre, Captain America, the First Avenger. Now, why there has not been a superhero movie set in World War II before now is beyond me.
Well, Hellboy,
I love Hellboy.
Yeah.
But this is like, you could do a Superman movie in World War II. He was around then. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you could make that kind of, it would be a shorter, you know, kind of a period thing. But this movie was just fantastic. Chris Evans did a fantastic job.
Yeah.
The transformation of him from the little weakling into the Captain America with the serum was really one of the better character-driven ways to use special effects in recent films.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't all about spectacle. And the story between him and Peggy is very touching, and it builds to makes his character come alive in a way that maybe...
Well, you know, if you think about it, that movie... In some ways, in the Marvel cinematic, at least that first phase, had more pressure on it than any other film but the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
Because being the one that was the last before the Avengers, it really had to...
First solo. Like, after this, we got to start tying all this
together. Well, but even then, it's doing a lot of setup for the Avengers.
Sure.
It's the last thing people are going to see. There's also pressure because all the other characters have been revealed, and so Chris Evans has to knock it out of the park as Cap for you to even have a hope that he could, in the Avengers, that he could be the guy that everybody looks to.
Well, the thing that...
And the writing, the acting, my favorite scene maybe in any Marvel movie is the one where Steve Rogers jumps onto, before he even turns into Captain America, jumps onto what he thinks is a live grenade to save everybody else. That's kind of like the thing that proves... He's the one that they should pick. I just love that part. But I'm really interested to hear now what your number one is. I love Captain America, the First Avenger as well.
Number one movie with first in the title is going to surprise some people, but it starts with 50 First Dates. Now, I know there's obvious plot holes. I know there's obvious, like, how did this woman, you know, how was she pregnant for 9 months, go through a childbirth and still have absolutely no memory of her now infant or toddler child. I mean, that obviously makes no sense. But, the character's willingness to say, I love you, and I am willing to do what it takes to make this relationship work, And if that means coming in here every morning and waking you up and having you scream at me and hit me and then show you a video, that's what I will do. And, you know, obviously, I'm not saying this is a realistic film, but that idea is such a powerful idea that it elevates the movie.
Yeah, for me. I like that. Well, and I appreciate that last little bit you said, because this list, I mean, obviously, this is your list, and it's not, you know, necessarily based on anything but your kind of emotional responses to those films. Yes. So I would imagine if we asked you top five films that were the best done, you know, that have first in the title, you might have the same movies.
There are clearly,
they might be a little bit reversed.
There are problems with the movie.
But so all technical things aside, these are the movies that you like the best that have first in the title. Listeners, we'd encourage you to comment on this, the blog post that this podcast is in, and share your own top five movies with first in the title. Also, you could contact Brian on Twitter using what?
10K Movies.
10K Movies, at 10K Movies. The website, again, 10kmovies.com. So here's what we've learned so far, I think, listeners. What really speaks to Brian in movies is compelling characters.
Yeah.
Some depth, the message, even if there may be some technical flaws here and there.
If you have a clear message that I think is important, I will give your movie more credit than it deserves.
That will resonate. We will hear more about those type of movies and movies that don't have those aspects to them. As we continue on in this journey, this quest, this podcast will be shared again on 10kmovies.com. You can also respond at 10kmovies. Thank you so much for taking time again to listen, to download, to share this with others, to listen and to share our love of movies and to share maybe a new movie, a new film that you haven't known before. Before we go, we also, this being our first episode, are going to start a sign-off. And our sign-off is going to be actually from a movie that I have seen that Brian has not. There's like maybe five of those. And so this movie, probably right below Geely in the top movies of all time, this movie's called Gone Fishing, starring Danny Glover and Joe Pesci, two actors you would not think would be in a movie this bad.
Danny Glover, you might.
Well, now, at the time, not so much. The only redeeming thing about this movie is that there is one exchange of lines that can bring some amusement. And so that's going to be our sign-off for this podcast and for episodes to come. So, friends, listeners, I hope your week is a 10.
10 plus.
Borderline 11. Have a good week, everybody.